Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Cambridge Inside Out.
And you are?
Oh, yes. And I'm Robert Winters, and you should really beware the Ides of March.
That's right. And this is Judy Nathans.
Et tu, Brute. Yeah. So, so anyway, nice day out today in Cambridge, Boston area. Yeah. And actually, I think maybe one thing worth mentioning off the top here is that this starting this Thursday, I believe, is spring training baseball games. So
they got back on schedule.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to seem too simple in saying this, but honestly, just the sounds of baseball make me happy.
That's good. I like that's the all sounds of basketball. I like March Madness, which is happening right now. It's going.
That's true. Fun. Yeah, yeah. So, but anyway, so I'm happy to see that happening, and I guess they're not going to cancel any games. They're delaying the start of the season. It's pushed back about a week, but they're rescheduling everything. So we should still have
one thing, Robert. I heard, and I didn't even know where you'd gone. Jackie Bradley Jr. is back. Where
he's
did he
back
go?
With the Red Sox. Yeah.
But where was he?
I forget actually what team he was with, but you know, I was actually, people were posting some of those spectacular catches of him, and you know, I love it. I love it. Yeah. You know, and I'm glad to see him back, and I hope he hits well too. So
and so is Tom Brady, but for the other team.
You know, that's funny. the sentiments about Tom Brady, how they've washed back and forth. We love him. He's the greatest hero of all time.
Yeah, now we hate him.
We hate him. Who is this guy? Why is he manipulating us this way?
You know, sure helps the television ratings. I'll tell you that.
Yes. Absolutely.
Okay.
So maybe it's not a good idea to stress too much on all the COVID stuff. You know, we sometimes speak about it a lot, but just say the numbers really are going down again. You know, 39
here,
new.
They're going down
in Cambridge and in the United States.
Not in
for
other
most
parts
part.
Of the world, yeah.
Hong Kong is definitely not doing so well right now. No. But, you know, the numbers are heading in the right direction again. Whatever this BA2 variant blip we've had, we seem to be coming through it now. The masks are no longer required in public buildings, in regulars, not
public
city
buildings, but just private can businesses. Make their own rules. Yeah.
And most people are still wearing the masks anyway, and some places are probably still requiring it anyway because they can do that if they wish.
What about colleges? Are they still requiring private colleges? Probably. Yeah.
They've relaxed that now, so you don't have to.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh. And for by and large, I mean, I think it's done college by college, you know, but I think Harvard, MIT, I know Harvard, I don't know about if MIT is relaxed just yet, but anyway, things are starting to look better. And, you know, normally when we head toward the warmer weather, we'll have a little bit of a decrease anyway. So, you know, everything's kind of working in harmony right now. So I think this, you know, nobody should drop their guard, but, you know, I think there are some reasons to be hopeful. So. We'll see, you know, see how it plays out, you know. So again, there's not going to be any cardboard fans at Fenway this year. So.
Oh my God. Was that last year or the year
before? No, that was the year before. You know, some, you know, some of the
forgot about
the insect fear of 2 years ago.
Yeah.
We've already sort of started to forget some of how it was.
Well, there was no vaccine. We didn't know people were dying like a lot, New York, everywhere.
And people didn't actually understand enough about what you should or shouldn't be fearful of. So, you know, so there was a lot of overreaction and but it was completely understandable. But anyway,
I'm glad we had a good reaction. Yeah,
definitely. I was actually there was this, you know, they started reporting COVID infections and deaths and hospitalizations differently maybe a month or two ago.
Yeah.
Based on what, you know, I mean, it was a presumption of COVID always first, but then they changed it and it actually kind of cut in half the number of hospitalizations and serious illness that COVID attributable. Well, they just decided, I mean, basically if you went and broke a leg and then they tested you for COVID and turned out you had COVID, you were a COVID case. But in fact, the reason you went to the hospital is you broke your leg.
So you're talking about hospitalizations versus deaths.
Right. So they changed that. And now when there are people who have died in hospital, you know, now they're redefining
diagnosis.
Yeah, so they've actually gone through a redefinition of what constitutes a COVID-related fatality. So for the state data, they were anticipating some percentage drop in the number of fatalities total, cumulative, based, you know, on this redefinition. The Cambridge number has not yet changed. It still stands at 142 fatalities since March of 2020.
And aren't they keeping track of vaccination versus unvaccinated people?
Yes, yeah. And Cambridge is actually good. That's the reason why I think people should feel reasonably confident we're going in a good direction.
Yeah.
Because we're not like Hong Kong, where, you know, there was only like 40% vaccination or something like that.
I'm surprised, because they were doing so much testing and so much this and that. But I guess they were doing it by containment. We talked about this versus letting it be out there.
The zero COVID type strategies are generally doomed to fail, because the only way you get through some stuff is you have to permit a certain amount of exposure or vaccination, which is kind of a pseudo exposure.
Right.
And if you think you can just basically bolt the door and keep it away, it doesn't work. And you run the risk of one day it having come roaring through.
I'm just surprised. I thought China had their own vaccine and were doing.
They do, but there's
get vaccinated. They can tell people to do it.
The Sinovac, I think it's called, is actually not considered as effective as like Pfizer and Moderna. And furthermore, if you're in a place like Hong Kong, you are distrustful of China. So there are that's part of the reason for the vaccine hesitancy in places like Hong Kong, is that they don't trust the government. And the government is saying you have to do it. Yeah.
But aren't they having infections rise in Shanghai and places that are
I'm sure there's a lot of this, whether they are allowed to admit it or not, there's probably a fair amount of distrust of the government there as well.
I doubt. Yeah, but you get shot if you don't pay attention in the government. So I'm sure if they needed to get vaccinations.
Right.
So something's different.
There's a good COVID strategy. We'll get you vaccinated at the point of a gun.
Well, that's what I thought they were doing.
Yeah, well, I don't know. So anyway, so that's, you know, that the never-ending COVID saga.
But right.
Hopefully, it'll be less of an issue as time goes on. Meanwhile, here in Cambridge, the city is still in search of a city manager, and a city auditor.
Yeah.
And there's not that much to report. I think I have it up on my website. They have updated the job description that went out for the solicitation for city manager applications. I have no idea how many people have applied for that, or how many will ultimately apply for the job.
And also, isn't it till March 30th that you can apply to be on the selection for the city?
Yeah, right. So, and I, you know, I've toyed with whether I wanted to apply, but you know, I haven't done it. I mean, I might do it, but you know, honestly,
still 2 weeks.
I'm not feeling all that confident in the sort of the pre-process. Ultimately,
yeah, but
maybe
at least you can find out whether they want you or not.
I know, and feed my cynicism by applying. But you know, so then they'll do the pre-screening and to whittle down the number of applicants to some manageable number. But honestly, the way they prescribed we need one person from this category, one person from that category, three from this category, whatever.
Oh, I didn't read the specifics. So
you know, I just it wasn't like completely stacking the deck in order to develop only a particular type of candidate, you know. But it was starting to push toward it, you know. If it was up to me, I'd say, can you manage a large organization?
That's have you managed
50% of
the
pre-screening committee?
But
you know, they try to make it everybody's little wish list of what they really want in a candidate. So that's not pre-screening. That's like screening at that point. You know, you're not just testing for qualification at that point. You're sort of trying to stack the deck. So anyway, I'm a little skeptical, but we'll see. You know, I'm trying to keep a good open mind. I haven't heard a word about. Well, I know they did a process out for getting a city clerk. Two of the city councilors are kind of riding herd on that one, and not a word yet about city auditor. So I don't know where.
It's Toner is on the one about the clerk. I thought he was the one
clerk.
About the auditor.
Yeah, I think it's Paul Toner and Denise Simmons. I believe is the subcommittee for the
okay.
the clerk. So where that's going, I don't know. I did at the March 8th, I think it was, meeting of the Government Operations Committee, they did revise the schedule. So everything, well, not everything.
Oh, but right. Yeah.
All of the later parts of it have all been pushed back about 3 weeks. So okay. the, you know, the optimistic timeline that they originally had hasn't quite worked out. It's been, so it's being stretched out a bit. But, you know, still, I believe they have it so that they'll have about 2 weeks.
I know, not much time.
Electing a candidate and Louis DePasquale leaving the job, which is honestly, it yeah. you shouldn't be down to 2 weeks. That's ridiculous.
Well, he might stay on for a couple of weeks.
My understanding is he doesn't wish to, but that's, I'll leave that choice to Louis. Yeah. But yeah, remember the way it works under state law and the city charter is that any assistant city manager can stand in with the approval of the city council as a acting city manager in the interim. And if it's happening, you know, in July, where things are a little more slow then anyway, I don't think it would be all that pivotal. I think that you might actually get one of the other, you know, department heads from either
human services,
public works, whatever, to do
it. They never replaced Lisa Peterson. She was the
We don't have a deputy city manager position filled right now.
I wonder if they'll ever will.
I don't know, but I think
gone a long time.
Yeah, I think if I read it correctly in the sort of job description, one of the things they want the new city manager to do is to fill the position of the deputy city manager.
Oh, all right.
I don't know that that's necessarily has to be done or whatever. And so I find it a little weird that they would put that in the job description because you're basically telling them how you're supposed to structure it. You know, I don't know if that's necessary really, but yeah. Anyway, so that's ongoing and, you know, round and round she goes, where it comes out, nobody knows. And, you know, but it'll be interesting. I'm noticing some other things that are making it to the schedule now. Related to charter change, today appeared, or maybe
just today.
First time I saw it was a calendar item for the ordinance committee to meet to talk about making, you know, pass an ordinance. When they pass those charter change things, it was supposed to be set by ordinance how they were supposed to do certain things. So at some point, the ordinance committee would have to meet in order to actually make it.
That was just scheduled today?
So it's scheduled, you know, not too far from now. It's in May. Oh, yeah.
That's kind of far from now.
I'll just pop over there for a moment right now here. So at the very, very bottom there, the ordinance committee will meet to conduct a public hearing on the ordinance, blah, 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 charter change, municipal code amendments.
Yeah, but so, isn't that kind of late in the day? Aren't they trying to?
Yes.
I mean, they're talking about appointments to boards and stuff, which has to be, isn't that?
You know, I don't want to be just sort of the eternal griper about all of this.
I know.
But, you know, the truth is that, you know, you do have a city council meets, supposed to meet every Monday, except they didn't do it yesterday because they were National League of Cities.
Yeah.
But, and then you have all these committees and to listen to the city councilors, it makes it sound as though it's just so burdensome and difficult in order to schedule meetings and get everybody together. And I'm thinking to myself, you people are very well paid. If you can't put your first priority is to schedule and attend the committee meetings that you are obliged to go to, you know, then if you can't do that, then you really should be seeking another job. You know, the fact of the matter is they have not had very many committee meetings. They haven't scheduled that many committee meetings.
There's no excuse
for that.
Health and environment had a lot. And
they just put a couple new ones on now, actually, for health and environment.
Why don't they just schedule them ahead of time and then they can always cancel it, right? They should just put it into the schedule.
Yeah, they've done that at
times. Like once a month. I don't know.
And they also, it seems like there are certain days, like God forbid you should actually meet on a Friday. right? Yeah. You know, the government operations committee over the years used to routinely meet on Fridays because it was less conflict with other things. Now it seems like council, well, we don't want to come in on Friday. We like our 3-day weekends.
But wait a minute, they've also changed offices that are closed at 12 on Fridays. So maybe that's part of it.
The thing is you can close City Hall, right, but you can still have the City Hall open for meetings.
I'm just saying it sends a message to me. I mean, it's we don't have to do anything.
Anyway, it's not a lot of heavy lifting, the way I look at it. So there are some other things that are happening in addition to that. As we were mentioning on our last program, we talked a little bit about that. The Neighborhood Conservation District and all these board appointments that got subject to the charter right. Mm-hmm. So they came before the city council, at the next regular meeting on March 7th. And then it turned out two of them were hastily made subject to the charter right that the council doesn't even have any review role at all in those appointments. So those were said, okay, sorry, pass those along, great. But then I think there were something like seven other ones that had board appointments. So, they kind of said, well, it's really not that consequential because after all, most of the people who are the appointees are reappointments. And under state law, there's a holdover provision.
They can still serve.
You can continue to serve in that role until a replacement is made. And then they said, I think something like maybe seven new appointments, right? And so what if we kick that can down the road? Honestly, I think-
putting it on the table, right?
Yeah, so what they did is rather than actually do anything, they said, well, we don't know what we want to do yet, so we're just going to put these on the table here and then we'll figure it out someday, and I thought.
Well, because they don't have a structure yet, and that's what she had said last time, and it's true, but now you're saying May, they're going to talk about charter changes with the new amendments, and I just, I don't know.
So in other words, so all these board appointments are pretty much just going to
stay out there in the wind.
So. Let's just kick them down, kick the can down the road for another few months, right?
Nobody's going to want to serve.
That's actually an issue. I think right now, at some point, when they put out the call for seeking volunteers to serve on city boards, they should put a little disclaimer at the bottom and say, apply at your own risk. Because if you're going to get called in front of a city council hearing where because you come from the wrong neighborhood or you represent the wrong person that they didn't want there, what are they going to do? They're going to like tear you to shreds at a public meeting? Is that really where we're heading?
You think it's going to happen in public? I think it's going to happen. I think they're going to develop some kind of structure where it happens not in public, and then. The decision they come to will be then discussed. I don't know. I just don't think it's that.
Well, that becomes a rather interesting legal question, whether that's even
they have to
consistent
develop
with
a way
open
to
meeting
do that,
law. Then. Right. I mean, it'd be one thing if you were hiring somebody, and there was a delicate contract negotiation. So you decided you needed to meet in executive session because this would be confidential or whatever. Yeah. But, to the notion that somehow appointments to people to serve on various boards, most of which are advisory only anyway.
Right. Voting capacity.
Yeah. I mean, this is not quite the same as sort of like hiring a school superintendent where we have to figure out our negotiation strategy in private,
are just more controversial. I mean, look, the planning board and the board of zoning appeal are the ones that, and maybe the historical commission appear to be.
Part of me actually is more offended by the notion they would do it in private because even if they would do it in public, because if you want to do it in public and you basically want to say such and such a person was not suitable for the planning board for this, I want that counselor on record in a very public way, basically rejecting a perfectly qualified.
No, I agree with you. I didn't mean it that they meet off. I meant more you can request information from a department who also look at these applications. It's not like it just goes to the city manager. I think people forget that. So couldn't you request information from the department to see who has applied to get some idea, and then maybe you make it public?
I suppose you could do that, but at some point, if I was city solicitor, I'd say, well, then what the city council is then doing is saying, okay, we're just going to reject these ones here. Now show us all the applicants so we can tell you who would be the acceptable candidates. At that point, the city council has become the appointing authority.
Okay, again, I didn't see it going that far, but I can see where your point.
Yeah. You know, we've reached this point of sort of ideological madness now.
Yeah.
There, I could very well see it going to that point and worse.
Okay, well.
So we'll see. I mean, it depends on whether there's five adults in the room. I don't know. Well, I don't know that there are.
Well, I think there's adults, whether they're reasonable or whether they're.
I speak metaphorically.
I know.
Right. So so anyway, so that's you know, continuing. One other item that's of some you know, I guess controversy, we've talked about, it's sort of all over the place, has to do with all the bike lane infrastructure and other things that are proposed up and around Porter Square. And, you know, and you know, there was at the last council meeting, it was, unless I've missed it, I think it was the last council meeting, they actually did a, the city manager sought the approval, there was no precedent for this, of the city council for
a delay in
a timeline, which unfortunately was woven into the bicycle safety ordinance. Those timelines absolutely have no belonging in there, but they've passed it as part of the law. Yeah. So then the question then is, when they couldn't meet it, then the manager could say, you know, should the managers be able to say, well, we're not able to meet it, so but we'll get it to it next month. Well, so now they feel that the city council then has to basically take a vote in order to say, well, we're okay with you delaying it, even if circumstances forced it. I find that weird.
I know, but doesn't he have to do that because of the ordinance? He has to come to the city council to ask for that?
I guess, but you know, if we got hit with a hurricane and the hurricane caused a delay that we made something.
Yeah, but I think people see that as more of a, man-made, whatever.
Well, but the point I would make is simply is that these are not the kinds of managerial decisions that, you know, forced by necessity that should necessarily be require city council votes.
And, well, I agree with that. And that's why, you know, technically you have a city manager, but apparently not.
Well, I mean, there seems to be some rather profound misunderstandings of the roles of city councilor. Yes. And city manager, and I think perhaps no better illustration of this can I think of than what happened at sort of a late order at the March 7th committee meeting. So what happened a couple months ago, the city council has basically said, look, Mr. Manager, we think you ought to be revising the work the policy for people to be allowed to work from home, do remote working, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and the manager goes, okay, sure, that makes sense. Let's talk about this here. But the manager and regular city staff and department heads have some concerns about things like accountability. You know, in other words, we don't really have a long track record to sort of say whether it would work in any reasonable way to basically allow many people to phone it in, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you don't have supervisory people around at home. You don't know whether it's somebody's actually working from home. How do you actually do that? So it takes a little time to work it out. Well, there was a late order pretty much calling out the manager going, Mr. Manager, why haven't you done something about this already here in how you manage your staff? And this moment the words were coming out of Councillor Mallon's mouth, I was saying to myself, hold on a minute. You are now directly instructing the manager how to interact with and make arrangements with the employees of the city manager. That is, you just ran right past the limitations of the charter by doing that. You know, now on the other hand, it was put in the form of an order. So an order is really still would require five votes as opposed to an individual basically leaning on it. But it was made quite clear that at least two city councilors are basically working on behalf of city employees as go-betweens to the manager. And I thought, wait a minute, is the role of a city councilor properly to be acting as an advocate for particular people who want to have a particular benefit?
Shouldn't they be going to like human resources or whatever the equivalent is, personnel department?
So the city manager should simply say, this is the policy we think you should carry out, Mr. Manager, right? And leave it at that. But when it gets to the point where there's clearly you've got city employees are basically
ringing up
city councilors and saying, this is, you know, basically we need you to negotiate this for us, you know? And I thought, hold on. That's absolutely not consistent with the city charter, you know? So that came up, and I just heard that. And I have to say, one thing that was interesting about it is that when that was put to a vote, I think it had 5 votes in favor of sort of pushing it. Yeah. But our newest councillor, Baran Azim, basically says, I don't think this is our role as city councillors. And when I heard him doing that, I was like, nice going, councillor. Very good.
Who else was it? So it was Toner Azim, Carlone?
I think Denise Simmons was absent. I believe Dennis Carlone understood this was not the province of the city council, so he voted present.
Right.
Paul Toner voted no, so he clearly understands the charter. Right. And Burhan Azim, the newest kid on the board, the two newest councillors seem to understand the charter more clearly than all the others.
Interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting comment, you know. So,
order was who was the sponsor? It was Malin and was it Siddiqui?
Siddiqui, I believe. There may have been others. I don't remember off the top of my head. You know,
I mean, it's interesting. Siddiqui has at least 6 people that work in the mayor's office, so who knows?
You know, there's always this. Yeah. There's always this tension, and has always been a tension between the sort of quasi-executive role of a mayor.
I know.
You know. Versus a manager, you know, and there's always like a tension about that too, you know.
Well, the staff has increased in the mayor's office over the years. So,
it fluctuates. I don't know how many people work out of the mayor's office. There were
six.
I know there were times maybe when Ken Reeves was mayor, it was kind of large, but you know, it's kind of up and down.
Other people too. It's other people.
I believe David Marr as mayor kept a very, very trim staff though.
Okay. Yeah. Well,
anyway, we're down to the last few seconds.
Okay.
So we'll be back. See you in the next seconds on Cambridge Inside Out.